Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast. If you're looking for the most in-depth insight into the world of downhill and enduro mountain biking, then this is the podcast for you. Thanks as ever to our supporting partners who help keep the podcast going and are also bringing you some great offers this month. First up is PNW Components. If you heard last week's episode with co-founder Aaron Kirsten, then you'll know all about them. They make awesome components at sensible prices. I've been using their Bachelor dropper post along with the Loam Lever remote, and that setup has been working great. The post is easy to install and reliable, and the Loam Lever, well, it needs to be seen and used to be believed. One of the highest quality mountain bike products I've seen in a while and an absolute dream to use. You can see their full range at pnwcomponents.com, and they're kindly offering Downtime listeners 10% off their entire range until the end of June. Just use the code DOWNTIME at the checkout. Next up, it's Morvelo clothing. If you want to wear something a little different from the masses, then Morvelo are for you. With a full range of great mountain bike kit, they've got everything you could want. I've been loving their new Selector Overland shorts, which are a simple pair of black shorts with a great cut, which means they're not flapping about all over the place when you're riding. They've also got a water repellent coating, but still feel like normal shorts. As a Downtime listener, they're offering you 25% off all full price clothing until the end of May, which is a mega deal, so be quick as you've only got a few days left. All you need to do is use the code Downtime, all uppercase, at the checkout over on morvelo.com/MTB. To find these links and the show notes for every episode of the podcast, just head to downtimepodcast.com. While you're there, don't forget to subscribe, as not all of our episodes are available on other websites. It's totally free and it means you'll get each episode as soon as it drops. There's a subscribe page on the website to help you get that done. If you want to support what I'm doing and show that you're part of an ever-growing crew of riders who are listening to the podcast, learning from my guests and getting faster on your bike, then head to downtimepodcast.com/shop, where you can find t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts and mugs. All proceeds go towards growing and improving the podcast. Other ways you can help are to leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen and tell your friends. That's how this thing has got to where it is, and it's how it will continue to grow. So a massive thanks to everyone who's been part of that so far. Also, a massive thank you to everyone who came to say hi at the Boltby Bash this weekend. It was great to meet you all and hear how much you're enjoying the podcast. So cheers for that. Right, this week's guest is Matt Walker. Matt was junior world champion in 2017 and took his best elite result of fifth place at Maribor a few weeks back. We chat about his career so far, his transition into elite and a lot more. Matt is clearly an analytical rider, and it was great to find out about the level of detail that he puts into his work. He's definitely a rider to watch out for. So without further ado, here's Matt Walker. Matt Walker, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. Thanks for taking some time out of your afternoon to come down for a chat.
Yeah, no problem.
Good stuff.
Pleased to be here.
Excellent. Well, yeah, so set the scene. Where are we right now?
We're in my living room. There's some pretty embarrassing pictures on the wall.
I haven't looked yet, but I'm just turning around.
Please avert your eyes.
Excellent. Good work. Cool. Well, obviously we're going to chat about bikes, but before we do that, there's quite a lot of passion for the motorsport side of things in your life.
Yeah, definitely. All my dad's side of the family's been big into motorsport through the years, and I guess it was just a natural thing to be into that kind of thing. My dad used to race superbikes when I was a kid, and I used to go around watching him all through the summer, and I've just been surrounded by engines, bikes and cars, I guess, all my life. So yeah, I love it. Absolutely love it.
And do you get involved in much of that side of stuff yourself?
Yeah, I've got a Lotus Elise that I drive like track days, and it's nice to go for a drive out in a nice car. And yeah, I'm quite big into the track days, I guess. It's nice for me to have something away from mountain biking that I can get stuck in with, I guess. And it's kind of similar in terms of like the speed and the control of the car is the same way as a bike. You know, you're always testing the grip levels and just pushing it, I guess, is the easiest way to explain it.
Nice.
But yeah, I'm big into that and I enjoy it, and it keeps my mind off the racing so much. And I can come into my race and then and feel refreshed, although the car is still kind of similar, but not.
What I mean. And do you get competitive? Like, are you looking for lap times? Do you race?
I don't race, but I've got a National B license, so I can do some sprint championships, but I'd have to do circuit racing. I'd have to go and do a license for that separately. But maybe into the future, I'd look to do something like that. I do enjoy it, and I'm just naturally competitive. So if I see someone catching me on a track day, I always try and stick with them. And yeah, it's great. Me and my dad go together, so we're always kind of having battles and stuff. It's really good.
Ever had any interesting crashes doing stuff like that?
Not on the track, so touch wood, I won't. But once I was driving home from a track day on real cold tyres, and it was a horrible day, and I spun the car on the bypass driving home. I hit a bit of standing water, and I just spun round in front of this. I spun round in front of a car and then off into the verge, but that was all right, really.
You got away with it.
Got away with it.
Good stuff. And have you ever raced motorbikes at all?
I have when I was a kid, yeah. I used to race, so like a mini moto championship.
Okay.
When I was seven and 8 years old, I guess. Yeah, at British level. I was doing pretty well. I was like third in the championship, I think, the 1 year. And it was just mainly just on karting tracks. So like mini motors on karting tracks all around the country. I was big into it, I guess, an influence from my dad, really. But that kind of stopped because I just used to get too nervous, to be honest. I guess I was just a little bit young to start racing then, and I was just found it quite nerve-wracking, and it kind of took the fun out of it a little bit for me. But so I knocked that on the head and then got into mountain bikes a few years after that.
Yeah. So was that through your dad as well, the mountain bike side of things?
Yeah, that was, because he used to use mountain biking as a training thing to get fit for the superbike racing. So I was always mucking about with my mates on my bike at home and around the village and stuff. So I guess he just asked me to come out one day, and that was where it all started for me, mountain biking for me. Yeah.
I've heard rumours of the Llandegla Red Route or something on a BMX.
Oh, I did do it. Llandegla Red Route on a BMX, yeah. That was the first time I ever went there, and it was brutal.
How old were you? Can you remember?
I think I was probably 10 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why he thought it was a good idea to take me there, but yeah, it wasn't great.
Yeah, you proved yourself and earned yourself a mountain bike.
Yeah, I had to work for it.
Excellent. And so you got yourself a mountain bike. Was it a Giant, I think, your first bike?
Yeah, I had a little giant Trance, it was, my first cross-country bike. Yeah, wicked little bike. It was in an extra small, which was quite rare at the time. Even now, you'd never find a bike in extra small.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was perfect for me. And I loved it. I used to ride it all the time, everywhere.
Awesome. And yeah, did you kind of get from that kind of just playing around as a kid into racing quite quickly?
I think once I started mountain biking, yeah, I did. Well, I probably started when I was 11, 12, 10 or 11. And then I was racing at 13. So it took me a couple of years. But when I first started, I was just watching videos of downhill, but never really thought about racing so much. And then I went to watch a downhill race, and then that was it. Then I went to Mulfrey and watched the national, and obviously I was massive into like jumps and the corners and downhill stuff. Even when I was riding with my dad and his mates at trail centres and stuff, I always loved the downhill. I could always keep up with them on the downhill bits, but I just struggled because I was young and unfit, I guess. As a kid, on the uphill. So downhill, when I went to watch a downhill race, it was, in my eyes, it was perfect. You get a lift up and just ride downhill all day. So that's probably where I first thought, oh, this is great. This, I want to do this.
Yeah. And you're pretty lucky. You've got the Pierce series local to here, right?
Yeah, that's it. Real lucky to get stuck in with that. My first race was Forest of Dean Mini Downhill. I did a couple of them, and then yeah, straight into the Pierce series then.
Yeah,
which is perfect because the tracks aren't too difficult, but they're fun for elite riders to race, and everyone can get down and have a good weekend. So there, it was perfect for me. Yeah,
yeah. How did you get on in that? Those, you know, first few races.
I think my very first race, I was towards the back. I think I can't really remember, but I know I was 13th, and the second one I did, I was 7th. So that was a bit better. I remember there being quite a lot of riders in the, I think it would have been juvenile was. And in the peer stuff, I did quite well. I guess the Forest of Dean ones were in the winter, so they were probably December and January. And then the peer, I probably had a couple more months riding downhill bike and then started the peer stuff. I think I did all right. I was on the podium the first race I did as a peer in Bringewood.
Yeah.
So that was quite good.
How did that feel, your first time on a podium as a young lad?
Yeah, pretty cool. Pretty cool. I remember I went 10 seconds faster between my first run and my second run. Don't ask me how. I don't really know. But I guess I was just real inconsistent with my lines and stuff. But I used to love it. Absolutely love it. I used to go and take a mate with me so he could watch. And no, we just had a great weekend. There was loads of people about in the evenings and stuff, staying in the camp. It was, a good time.
Yeah, nice social scene as well as the enjoying the racing.
Yeah, that was it. It was a great weekend away for everyone, really, my mum and parents. And, it was wicked.
Cool. At what point then did you get spotted by Madison Saracen? And was it Will that spotted you?
Yeah, Will sent us an email after Juvenile National Champs. So that was 2013. So just from then, really, towards the end of the year, 2013, he spoke to us. And I think to start with, there was four riders that had been asked what they were doing for the next year or next couple of years. And then he was going to narrow it down for two lads. And I said I was keen. And just started up from there. Just me and Jack Tennyson got on the team there. And never looked back.
Do you know what it was he'd seen in you? Has he ever told you that?
No, he's never said, no. I guess I just, I did well. I won national champs in 2013, and then the last national of the year, I managed to win that as well. So I guess I was just at the front, and he obviously watched me ride a little bit and thought I had a bit of potential, and it just went from there.
Cool. So what was it like then moving on to their development squad? It must have been quite a difference.
It was a massive change, yeah. The first year was still quite family orientated. We had obviously huge support from Saracen and the team. We had all trick bikes with nice stuff on and nice kit, all spares that we could want, mechanic to help us out at the races, a big kind of presence at the races as well, a big tent. But then I still had my dad to come and help me do a warm up at the top, and he'd look after the bike and keep the bike at home, and he was still heavily involved with it all, which was really nice. And then as we got older and went into the second year youth, the parents kind of took a step back and it went a little bit more kind of professional, just to get us prepared for junior then. If we had the chance to go to World Cup racing, obviously your parents aren't going to be there at the top of the hill. And it's just a good time and good natural progression really through the years. And they did a really, really good job. It was all really well organised and everyone knew where they had to be when, and it's no different now.
Awesome. Yeah, slick operation.
Yeah.
So do you remember then your first World Cup? What was that like?
Yeah, I remember my first one. It was Lourdes 2016. I'd done a little bit of riding abroad, but it was nothing like that. I think Lourdes is quite a special one anyway. Not that I really knew it, but it was kind of different to a lot of the World Cups.
Yeah.
That uplift thing that they got there is pretty gnarly. So I remember being pretty scared of that the first time. And just the amount of people on the side of the track all week, getting up really early to ride because I was in B practice. Yeah. I don't know. It was a good weekend, but the track was pretty gnarly. And being in B practice wasn't the best because people were making it look really hard work. So I remember thinking, everyone was talking about this wall section, which is where it dropped over. It's quite famous in the videos and stuff. It's this big left-hander. I remember being stopped at the top of their first run and everyone was crashing down. I couldn't really understand why. And then rode through it and it was a lot better than I expected. But it's not very confidence-inspiring for your first World Cup to be in B practice and watch people crash their brains out all morning. But I had a good time and qualified second, I think, and finished second in the race. So
yeah. Pretty good start.
Yeah, really, really good start. I was way more than I was hoping for. I had no idea who was even going to be there. First time I'd race anyone else that wasn't British. Wow. So, it was a good weekend. Nice surprise.
In at the deep end then, really.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
How were the nerves? Did you feel...
I can't really remember, but I had my coach with me at the top and I think Will came up for qualifying. I wasn't really too nervous, to be honest, just like any other race. I don't really seem to get any more nervous anywhere else than other places. I don't know, it's kind of pretty constant. I'm just racing the bike, so that's what I can only do what I can do kind of thing. That's what I always try and tell myself, as my best is my best, and that's it. All I can do is I'll just have to see where it puts me. And if I have a good run after qualifying, I knew I had quite good pace and that I could be have a really good result. Not that I wanted to think about that so much when I set off the gate, but I was confident and I knew that if I did all the things I wanted to do, then I could be up there, and that was enough, I guess.
Yeah. And so at that stage in your career, like, how much work were you putting in away from the racing, like in, you know, in the gym and other sorts of training?
It's kind of evolved year on year. At that time, I see a lot of kids nowadays in the gym quite young, lifting big weights. But when I was that age, I didn't really do any of that. All through youth, I was just riding, and I'd rode my downhill bike once a week or at the weekend if I could. Never really rode it in the week. I just rode my trail bike a couple of times a week, and yeah, just mucking about like as I always have, really. I never really did anything too specific. I didn't have a road bike at the time, just a little bit of turbo stuff. There's nothing really too heavy going, just a lot of riding and having a bit of fun, really.
Yeah, I get, you got to enjoy yourself, haven't you?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think that's what my coach has always said, Phil Dixon. He's always said that you've got to have headroom. As someone that young, you've got to have headroom in your training. So if you're doing all the training, doing all the heavy weights, doing all that, and you're still not getting the results, where are you supposed to progress from there? Because you're always doing it already. Yeah. Whereas if you've got someone with a lot of talent, you can just kind of nurture that talent, and you just do the bits that are necessary to get you at the top and keep you there for the time being, and then keep improving year on year. So my training's definitely, each year I pick it up, which is quite nice, knowing that I've still got headroom from where I'm at now and at elite level. It's good. It's nice to see.
Yeah, interesting stuff. And then obviously your junior career went pretty well, and you took junior world champs in Cairns in 2017. Yeah. Talk us a little bit through how that weekend went from your point of view.
It was really cool, actually. I remember going there and having this real trick bike made, and it was on a 29er as well, so we'd only just got on the 29er. It was kind of a mix of, like, we had the current mist at the time, we had that rear end, and then this like bodged up front end to fit, and then a CNC machine linkage and with all Saint parts on it, and proper trick paint job by Fat Creations. It was really cool, and I still look at that bike as one of my favorites, just because it was so unique. And I know that was like the only bike that was ever made, and to go and race at a world champs and win on it was it's really cool to have a nice story behind it as well.
Yeah,
more than just any other bike race. So the weekend went really well. Obviously. For the result, but I don't really remember a lot. I just remember, like, it was really dusty and really dry, and it was like nothing I'd ever ridden before. It was way, way slippier than I expected it to be, just because it was so dry. I went there the year before, but it wasn't like that. I think it was because it was later in the year, and it was their kind of dry season. It was just so dry. But I really enjoyed it. I still feel like to this day, like, my race run wasn't what I could have done. I still had time, but I wanted it so badly that I was just pushing too hard and making mistakes. And I guess in a way, I was lucky to get that result, but I guess I was still up there and still rode the best on the day. So you can't argue with that, but I definitely had more in the tank.
Interesting.
It's cool.
Yeah. So at what point did you start comparing your times to the elites?
Quite early on, really. At national stuff, even as a youth rider, I think Mulfrey, I was in the top 10 overall as a youth. And I had a couple of quite good results as like second year youth. So quite early on, I think all the way through my career, as a youth, I was comparing to junior, and junior comparing to elite. So I guess, yeah, probably juniors. Second year juniors, definitely. It was every race I was looking to see where I'd be, especially at World Cup stuff. I think it's quite important, really.
Yeah. And how are you faring towards the end of your junior career? Like, where would you normally
I had I think I had a couple of top 20s, but generally between 20th and 25th, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
So pretty good.
Yeah, so it gives you a good feel for where you're likely to be in the following year.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I always think it's tough saying that because although you race on the same track on the same day, it's quite different racing as an elite. Not just because the track's maybe a little bit rougher and stuff. It's just, I think for that first year, for me, it was quite difficult because, well, to start with, the first couple of races, you're lining up with your idols and you're trying to turn your idols to your rivals kind of thing. And it's quite difficult to get your head around where G. Atherton's setting off for his race run in front of you. It's quite a surreal kind of situation to be in.
Yeah.
So it took me a couple of races to kind of get over that and try and almost lose that respect that you had for him in the way. Although, obviously, I still respect them massively for how much they've inspired me, but you're there as a competitor and you're trying to race them now, and it's just a different mindset to be in, I guess.
Yeah.
You look at them in a different way. But
was that hard then to take them off that pedestal that you put them on and actually want to beat them?
Yeah, that's it. It is weird because your whole childhood or the whole time you've been looking up to getting to the point where you're at now, you're willing them on and you're supporting them at the races, and then all of a sudden you're lining up next to them or behind them or whatever, and you want to beat them as badly as anyone else. And it is different. It's a weird mindset to be in, but it's pretty cool at the same time. It just takes a bit of time just to get over it because, I guess you're pinching yourself every weekend.
Awesome. So how did you approach that first year in elite then? Did you have goals? Like what did you want to get done?
I think that first year I just wanted to be inside the top 20. Coming off a junior, I had a couple of close ones to the top 20, I guess. So I just wanted to stay in that consistently throughout the year and just have a steady year, really. Just, I think that year is really important for learning. Like I was saying, there's quite a few things that change. And just there was no pressure on me to really go and do anything spectacular. I just ticking the boxes all the way through the year and learning at every race I went to. Really nothing too spectacular, just give my all at the races and see what's going to happen, really. Yeah. I think in my own mind I was hoping to get a couple of top 20s, which I did, and I was over the moon with that.
Well, you did a bit better than that, didn't you? It didn't take very long either.
No, I guess I broke, well, I had a bit of a rough start. I broke my hand in Croatia, which is the first one, and then recovered, ready for Fort William, and got seventh. So that was massive. I'd never, ever expected to get that. And even now, even though I'm only a year in, I'd be over the moon with seventh place at a World Cup. It's getting harder and harder, and everyone's on the top of the game at the minute. So, that was probably one of my standout performances, I would say. One of the rides, one of my best rides I've had.
Yeah.
I can't really tell you much about that run just because I was in such like a, I was focused so hard all the way. I don't really remember a lot about it, but yeah, that was probably one of my biggest achievements, I found.
Yeah.
I think.
And a good place to take that as well with the UK crowd.
Yeah, it's always been good to me, Fort William, really. I took a win there in juniors and that was amazing. And then to come down to the big crowd, I guess. As a junior, the crowd's kind of at the top of the hill. But when you're racing elite, they're all at the bottom waiting for you, and three or four people deep all the way down the motorway. It's such a cool feeling.
Yeah.
So I had a good one at the end of the year as well, 10th at World Champ. So that summed my year up, I guess, in a really good way and fired me up going into winter, really, knowing that I can do it. And I've got a top 10 now, and just push me on through the winter to train hard and try and stay there and prove that I am a top 10 rider, I guess, for this season.
And Lenzerheide, you've said in the past, is not a track that you're like, you get on particularly well with.
No, so not at all.
How did you turn that around to get in a 10th at World Champs? Because, you know, everyone's pushing and going for that perfect run.
Yeah, no, I've not really been a huge fan of Lenzerheide in the past. I think it's been so dry and the ground's really marbly there, and I just don't seem to get on with it very well. I seem to be struggling quite a lot. But I think it was maybe later in the year, it would have been for World Champs at the end of the year, and they'd had a lot of rain the last month before the race, and the soil was so much better than when we'd ridden it in the mid-season a couple of years before, and it was just so much grippier, and it just helped me get up to speed a little bit more. And at World Champs, you have an extra day of practice as well.
Yeah.
Although it's like the practice is a bit weird, you get an extra day on it, so you get that little bit more time to get used to the surface and the terrain and stuff and properly get comfortable. And I think that just helped me, just that little bit extra time. I'm generally not the fastest of getting up to speed anyway. I like to build through the weekend quite a lot. And yeah, I just took all the time I could and laid my best effort down on the Sunday afternoon, and I was just lucky enough that I got inside that top 10. So
yeah, sweet. So you came out of the season feeling pretty confident and pretty happy about your first year in Elite.
Yeah, really good. I wasn't as consistent as I hoped, but I had some really, really solid results and then some not so great ones. But I think generally I had a really good year and I had a lot of fun, and the bike felt pretty good all year and didn't really particularly struggle. I had a couple of crashes, and it's always good to learn from stuff like that. And it's not, you know, you lose a lot more times than you win, put it that way. So, no, it's just a good building year, really, and learning the trade a bit more. And yeah, really fired me up going into the winter, ready for my second year.
Sweet. So how did you approach the winter then? Because it's a massive off season, isn't it?
And it's huge, yeah.
It must be kind of hard to decide how to approach it, how to break it down, and to keep motivated through that, especially staying in the UK where the weather's not always conducive to being out riding.
No. Well, I guess me and Phil, we sat down just after World Champs and had a talk about our year and how we were going to move it and step it up for the next season and over the winter and what the plan was, really. And I had a bit of time off, but I guess after Worlds, I think I had 5 weeks off, and by the end of October, I was ready to get back to it, which is quite early. But I was, as I said, I come off the back of World Champs and I was fired up and wanted to get going again and kind of be on the front foot, ready for the 2019 season. So yeah, got started pretty early, and when I was going up to Sheffield every week and training up with him and a few other boys, and yeah, just got stuck in really. And I guess I did a lot of gym stuff kind of up till Christmas and then just after, and then never really rode the downer bike an awful lot. And then kind of jumped back on the downer bike January, February time, started suspension testing and changed my gym stuff up a little bit, and yeah, got ready for the season that way.
Yeah.
I guess the bulk of the work was the first half of the winter, and then the second bit, you're kind of getting back into, you start to see the season on the horizon, start getting back on your downhill bike and having a lot more fun. And yeah, it was easy enough.
Yeah.
I always try and change up what I'm doing each week. I've got a trials bike in the shed and tried to get on that once a week, just as something different, keeps it fun. I was doing a bit of climbing, a bit of, yeah, all sorts really, just to mix it up and keep it fun.
Yeah, and then up in the weights in the gym a bit more. And
yeah, that's it. I guess over the last couple of years, I've been doing a little bit more in the gym, and this year was I did a little bit of weightlifting towards the end of the previous off season. So this winter I started pretty much straight away on the lifting and a bit more heavy weights and stuff, just because I felt that the gains it gave me were worth taking. If you see what I mean? It was worth doing. So yeah, we got stuck in with that again and enjoyed it and made some good progressions in the gym as well. So
sweet.
The biggest thing is that I noticed them on the bike. It's not just the numbers are going up in the gym, but I'm getting faster on the bike as well. So it's obviously working, and yeah, it was probably my first year that I've gone at it all winter, really.
Yeah. When you say you've noticed you're getting faster on the bike, is that a feeling or are you measuring that?
We do a lot of some time runs. We go out and we'll generally go to somewhere in Portugal or Spain where the weather's a little bit better and the tracks are longer and rougher and wider than they are here. Yeah. Just something similar to a World Cup. I know a lot of people go to San Remo, and that's kind of a good place to go. Yeah, and do a few time runs and compare with other people and compare from times from the last year or the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. If I go back to the same venues again. And yeah, sometimes it can just be a feeling. Like I can go to Revolution and ride tracks that I've ridden for years, and at a certain point, I'm not as tired as I remember being, or I'm taking compressions better, or just carrying more speed, and you can feel it. So yeah, I guess it's a mix between the feeling and actually measuring it.
Yeah.
I guess with the strength kind of thing, that's all kind of a feeling. But maybe with suspension and setting stuff up, maybe you put a time on it just so you know it's in black and white.
But yeah, fair play. And do you measure other stuff other than time throughout your kind of off season? Are you looking at, I don't know, particular weights or, you know, VO2 max or any of these kind of sort of more scientific stuff? Or
not a huge amount, no. The only thing that I really track is, say I go for a ride or road ride, I'll track that and track my power and my heart rate and stuff like that and send all that away. So each ride that I go on, I get a file and download that and send it away to my coach so he can look over it and just see what's going on, really. He doesn't plan the whole thing off those rides, but he can see generally where we're at, and it's just a bit more data for him.
Yeah,
I can say I felt good on that ride, and the data will back it up by saying, yeah, he was strong by this point at this point. And it's just a little bit more data for him, just so he can make sure that we're doing the right thing at the right time, and we're kind of on target to get to where we want to be. But yeah, so it's not an awful lot we measure in the gym. It's not really about how much we're lifting, it's how we're lifting it and the technique. And it, you know, it's really, really important to have a good technique, otherwise you're just going to hurt yourself.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you see a lot of bad technique in gyms.
Yeah, you do.
Definitely. Yeah. So you spent some time in South Africa as well.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about that.
I went over to South Africa. That was organised by my coach. So he trains the Cannondale cross-country team.
Okay.
So all them boys go out. I guess they have, well, last year they had the first World Cup was in Stellenbosch in South Africa, and they have the Cape Epic there, and they all do that. So it's really nice to go out there. It's 30 degrees or 25, 30 degrees and really good trails. So we just went out there just because it was just somewhat different, and it's nice to get into a bit of heat in December just before Christmas, get a tan. And no, it's nice just to go, and you can go and do some long days instead of in the winter. It's like you don't want to go out until midday because it's dark, or 11 o'clock because it's dark, and then it's dark again by 3, 4 o'clock. It's just not, don't know, it's not very inspiring to go and ride your bike or go in the gym or whatever. You can kind of, when I got back, I spent 2 weeks in South Africa. It was awesome. I did loads of riding, loads of gym stuff. My S&C coach came out to do all our gym stuff with us, and had a really good time, like explored the culture a little bit there and just got to see a different place. It was really cool. And when I got back, the biggest thing that hit me, I literally landed into Manchester Airport and I just thought, everyone looks broken because it's 2 more weeks in shit weather.
Yeah.
And everyone just looks so miserable and broken, and they're arguing with each other. And yeah, like everyone out over in South Africa, it was summer, everyone was having a good time. They're down the beach and chilling out and got the shorts and t-shirt on and just having a good time. It was just, yeah, it was a nice place to be at that time of the year.
Yeah, good stuff. And did you get out for some training rides with the XC lot as well?
Yeah, I tried to, but them boys are unbelievable. I couldn't believe how strong they are. I was just brutally strong there. But yeah, we did go out. We had, I think, 3 or 4 sessions with them. They'd go out and ride and do their training session in the morning. If in the afternoon, we kind of do a joint session on a couple of days, and we go and ride at Yonkersuk, which is this big kind of trail centre over there. Got some real long downhill sections, and we just give them a bit of coaching on the downhill.
Oh, cool.
And just to try and help them out a little bit. But generally, they were pinned. I couldn't believe how fast they were going on 100 mil.
Yeah, with the saddle up.
With the saddle up their ass. Yeah. No, it was really good, really good week, and it's nice to. The biggest thing I found was, I took away from it how they live their lives, just day to day, without the training. Just, you know, what they not even what they eat. It's just how they rest and how, you know, when they turn off, that how just how they chill out and what they do and how they organize themselves to get the best out of what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, they're either training or they're chilling out, and they have a good time with it as well. So, yeah, it's just kind of that legacy effect, I guess. After I come home, there's a few things that I add into my daily routine just so I can better myself, really. And okay. To take that away from that camp is probably the biggest thing, as well as making quite a big step forward on the bike and with my fitness and in the gym. It was, yeah, just little things to add into my daily routine, really, that's going to help me.
Can you give us an example of some of those things, maybe?
Yeah, maybe just like you'd wake up in the morning, you do a little activation session before you went anywhere, so you're not just getting onto the bike cold and stiff. You just a few little things just to loosen up, and yeah, all sorts, just organizing, you know, little things like organizing your kit and organizing your water bottles and just little things like that, planning your food so you're not rushing around before you're going out on a ride. It's all there sorted for you. Just little things like that it just makes your life easier, really.
Yeah.
It makes a difference.
Yeah, because I guess the rest is where the gains come from, really. Like, you do the gym work to break yourself down, and then it's the recovery that builds you back up.
So yeah, definitely.
Resting well is a skill.
It is, definitely. And it's quite difficult here because there's so much going on. Like, my mates are into motocross and they're quite like-minded, so they're always up to summer, and it's quite difficult sometimes to just chill out and just do nothing. But yeah, it's definitely a skill.
Yeah, fair play. And I'm sure I read somewhere, I don't know if this is true or not, do you train once a week with Danny? Do you get together?
Yeah. So we go, that's when we go up to Sheffield. So we usually go up Monday night and stay over and do a couple of gym sessions and do a road ride together. So yeah, I train with Danny once a week, and it's quite nice to see him every week, really, and keep building on that relationship that we've got going on, and we get on really well together. It's nice to hang out with your teammate when away from the races as well.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be quite a stressful thing at the races if someone's struggling, or, you know, it can be quite difficult sometimes. So just, you know, just have a crack away from the racing and do a bit of training together. It's nice to train with other athletes as well from different sports. It's quite cool. Everyone can kind of bring something different to the table and help each other out. It's good.
Do you find that you push each other on when you train together? Like, is there a competitive thing, or even away from the races?
Yeah, you can't get away from the fact that we're competitive, and he wants to beat me as much as I want to beat him. It's just one of those things, but we get on really well with it, and we push each other on, and I think we help each other really well at the races as well. So no, it's a good relationship, and we got on really well.
Cool. Yeah, what's it like having Danny as a teammate then? Because
yeah, it's quite a big change from the year before Danny joined the team. We had Mark and Matt, and the vibe on the team changed when Danny came. He brought a lot of attention to the team from the media and stuff, so that was quite a lot different, and it was different to get used to, I guess. But I really like it because he's at the top of the sport, and that's where I was headed to, or was where I was hoping to be.
Yeah.
And it's a benchmark for me now, because I know what if he does this and that and all the other, and that's where it gets you. So I know it's a great benchmark for me, and it gives me an insight to how to get to the top of the sport, because I can just see what he does and copy it, and, you know, put my own twist on it. And it's really helped me, and on and off the bike, really. I can follow him in practice and stuff and see lines that I would never have spotted myself, and how he rides a bike. And yeah, it's really helped me, I guess. Just that natural progression.
Yeah, are there certain things that you've learnt from Danny that you've kind of put into your own riding and your own structure?
Yeah, a few different things, really. It's hard to pinpoint things particular, maybe just subconsciously, but just following him and just seeing how he rides. And for the first couple of years, I seemed to struggle at kind of World Cup level. I seemed to be able to keep up and follow and stuff at the national stuff. But as soon as we got to World Cup, I'd be following him in practice, and we'd do two or three runs and then he'd just be off. He'd just leave me. And I couldn't keep up for anything. I just really, really struggled. Yeah. I think it's just what I've learned from that is it's just the way that he gets up to speed is faster than me. And it's not anything in particular. It's just, he's been doing it longer. It's just a few bit more experience. And I think by race day, I come back up there, but it just takes me a little bit longer. So it's just, in a way, riding with him and training with him and stuff, it's almost taught me to just trust myself as well. Like, I know what I'm doing. I don't want to be Danny Art. I don't want to be Aaron Gwynn or G. Atherton. I want to just be Matt Walker and do it my way and take inspiration from other riders and other people from different sports and what they do well and kind of add that to my basket kind of thing and just do what I'm doing, but take the best bits from everyone.
Yeah, yeah. It's not the same recipe for everyone, is it?
No,
for sure.
That's it. No, yeah. For sure.
Let's talk a bit about bike setup then.
Yeah.
How do you approach bike setup? I get the impression that you're quite thorough.
Yeah. I like to know. I the biggest thing is I need to understand what's going on. So the first year I went to Fox, all I did was just learn. When I first went to the Fox test, I just learned everything. So I just go all the way on one. Say we'll take high speed compression for a start. Yeah. I just went all the way open, did two runs, all the way shut, did a run. So I noticed the difference. Wrote it all down in a notebook. I have a notebook every year that I can just write notes through, and so I know where I'm at. And then just noting everything down, I'll go to a different place and note it down. Note the settings down, noted why I changed it. Even if I went in the wrong direction, I've noted it down, so I know that maybe in a year's time I'm at a track where I'm suffering with the same issue, I can look back and go in that direction because it'll work in that place.
Yeah.
So I write a lot of things down just because I don't want to keep it all in my brain. I like to just write it down and know it's there, and I know I can go back to it at any time. But generally, yeah, with bike setup, I think the biggest thing for me was to understand what I'm doing. So that's, as I say, with the notes and stuff, and learn what click does what. So that's the biggest thing for me, is to definitely understand where I'm at and how it works. And then the second thing from there is just like basic stuff, really. Set the sag and go from there. And just for the bike to be balanced, back to front, the speed and the rebound. And yeah, just I want the front end to take the bumps the same way as the rear does.
Yeah.
And just so I can, it's really helped with that 29er, because I feel like, well, the axles are higher for a start, makes a bottom bracket feel like it's lower, so you feel more planted on the bike without even dropping into the travel. Yeah. So that was a nice feeling, and it makes you feel like you don't have to move back to front. The biggest thing I noticed was I could just sit in the middle and just hit stuff, and the bike would just take it a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
So that was quite a big confidence thing, because I think my riding style kind of suits that. I don't move that much on the bike. I just kind of sit in the middle and just play through stuff.
Yeah.
So I guess that's probably one of the reasons I got on with the 29er so well. And yeah, it's just all feel. I tried to do a lot of suspension stuff all on feel. Like I was saying before, I always add a time to it, but it's always when I'm right at the end. I never do a timing very early, and I guess that's be down to me not getting up to speed very fast. And when I do a race run, it needs to be 100%. I can't time all day because you just get tired, and then you start changing the bike because you're tired. And mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's important to know what you're doing, know how it works, and for me, for the bike to be balanced back to front, and then
yeah.
We just go from there, really.
So as a result of all of that kind of tinkering away from races and learning how it all works and understanding it, writing it down, do you think that helps you get to a good setup quicker when you're at a race?
Yeah, definitely. That's the biggest reason why you do it, because you don't have a lot of practice at World Cup racing. If you can notice a problem and then know which direction to go in, then it can save two or three runs. And that every little helps, I guess. You want to be on the right path as fast as you can to get in the bike as best as you can get it. Especially in a World Cup situation where it's quite stressful anyway. Yeah, I think it's really important.
Yeah. does that mean you see less of Geordie throughout a race weekend? Because I do. Some people spend a lot of time with him.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Yeah, I don't often see a lot of Geordie, just because I trust myself and I know what I'm doing. I do go and speak to him and I'll say I've done this because of that, and it's always usually, yeah, it sounds about right. Sounds like you got it sussed, or it seems like that would make sense. So yeah, there is a couple of times where I'm not sure, have not known whether to use, say, air pressure or oil, okay, damping.
Yeah.
So with compression. So there's some times where you need an expert, just because he's works with loads of different riders and he's probably come across this situation before.
Yeah.
So he could give a bit of advice, and it's always nice to have a good relationship with him. So yeah, I do see him, but I you see a lot of people around there the whole time, and I'm pretty self-sufficient when it comes to setting the bike up.
Fair play. So we've got around to January then, and you've got the downhill bike back out of the shed.
Yeah.
Do you miss it when you don't ride it through the winter? Like what keeps you off it for so long?
I do miss it, yeah, and I think it's really important to miss it as well. Because what keeps me away from it is, I don't know. I think sometimes when you get to the end of the year, it's quite nice to put it away and do something else. A lot of boys get the motocross bikes out and spend a month or two riding motocross. I know Danny goes and rides motocross a lot in the winter, or at least the first half of the winter. But yeah, it's just quite nice to do some things that I've not done before. Like get out on the trials bike and do a few trial events and just little things like that. Get out in the car, do track days and do stuff that I've not really had time to do in the summer so much.
Yeah.
But then when I do get back on the downhill bike in January, I'm excited to get on it. I get on it and I as soon as I drop in for the first couple of runs on that first day, I'm like, oh yeah, this is why I do this job. Because it always puts a smile on my face and I just love it, absolutely love it. But I think I think the way to have a long career is to stay off it in a way, which seems backwards, but for me, it's like putting a jigsaw puzzle together. Sometimes you just get a bit stuck and you get a bit frustrated and you can't do it, but it's always good to go away, have 10 minutes, come back, and you can always kind of figure it out then.
Yeah.
And that's the same way I see the downhill racing, is that if I just do it too much, I start missing stuff and I'm not fully switched on and focused. Whereas if I come away, have a break from it, I come back, I'm hungry, I'm ready to go, I'm excited, by January I'm fit, I'm strong, I'm ready to get on it and just excited. So, and then I get on the bike and I have a good feeling and it just kind of snowballs from there.
Does it take you long to get back up to speed?
Not really, no. I think it's kind of, by this point, it's very much muscle memory. I know how to ride the bike and that's never going to go away. Yeah. It's just those fine little tweaks when you get to race time and doing that work in the gym and getting explosive and, yeah, that little bit of bike time just before the start of the season is usually enough for me.
Yeah, and you've been on the Saracen for a good few years. Obviously, you've had the change to 29, but you've been on that for a while as well now.
Yeah,
does that help having a consistent bike?
Yeah, definitely. We try and change things and evolve the bike every year, just try and make it better. But yeah, generally, from the first Saracen Mist I've ridden, it's not felt a whole lot different to the one I'm riding today. Although a geometry and stuff has changed, you can still get on it and go, oh, this is a Saracen, you know, straight away the way it works. And yeah, it's got distinctive features and it's nice for me to know that I can ride that bike well. And you know, with having Danny on the team as well, we know that bike can be in the top three and potentially win World Cup races, so we know the bike's good enough. So that's a lot of pressure off me, and I know that it's all on me really to do it.
Yeah. And a pretty good start to the season so far. So it kicked off with Riola BDS, which you took the winner.
Yeah.
Beat Danny.
Yeah.
How did that feel, like turning up to that first BDS of the year and having a result like that?
Yeah, it was nice. It's always nice to, I always see the first BDS of the year, it's kind of like time training at a World Cup. I remember I was listening to an interview with Loic, and he kind of said that it means nothing, but it means everything at the same time. And I related to that so much in that it's a BDS, it's a smaller race on a kind of smaller track. It's not a World Cup. There's not all the boys there. But yet, if you win it, you get so much confidence from it. And if you're not there and you're not quite at the front, it can really hurt you. So, to come away from Riola, the first national, and with a win was really nice for confidence. And I knew going into that race that I was riding well and I was fit and stronger than I've ever been.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was riding well. So to back that up with the result was really nice.
Yeah, definitely. And again, some big names there, really, like from the UK scene.
Yeah.
Taking a few scouts there to kind of give you a bit more confidence, I suppose, that you're in a good place.
Yeah, that's it. And I know Danny's had a pretty good winter and I'm sure he's riding well. And to go and to beat him is always nice because he's at the top of the sport and, you know, he's competing for wins. And, you know, to be up there and to beat guys like that is a great thing. And that early in the year is a nice pat on the back and shows that I've had a good, strong winter. And, yeah, just exciting to get stuck into that first World Cup after that race.
Yeah, so you took that confidence, I guess, onto the Maribor IXS weekend before.
Yeah.
Was it hard at that point to kind of not get a bit carried away? Because obviously, you
definitely
must be feeling quick.
Definitely, yeah. Because the year before, I did the same at Cwmcar. I had a really good race there. Managed to win the first national, but then went to the World Cup and just almost too much confidence and felt invincible and crashed and hurt myself. And I was the whole week, I was thinking, well, just don't do that. You've got the confidence, you've got the speed, just take your time and it will come. And yeah, I just wrote the IXS just like any other race and took my time getting up to speed in practice. And it's just knowing that your speed is enough. You know, if you feel like you're on it in that race run, it'll be enough. And that's such a big weight off your shoulders, knowing that your best performance is going to be enough at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So as long as I get to that point where I'm able to deliver, then I'm happy. It takes a lot of pressure off. I'm not trying to find anything that isn't achievable.
Yeah.
I think everything's achievable and I just take it step by step and until the Sunday afternoon.
So did you hold back at all at that IXS or were you kind of did you just build gradually and kind of find your way through it?
Yeah, that's it. Just build gradually through the practice. We've got quite a lot of practice. So I just took it steady, just limited my runs each day and just stopped when I felt like I'd had enough and I was riding well and I wanted to leave it at that. And just stayed off the deck, try not to crash. And yeah, I think in the race run, I definitely didn't hold anything back. I just race like any other race I'd go to. I raced as hard then as I did at the World Cup and at the National the week before. I'm a racer, and when those beeps start, you can't hold me back. I'm just going to go as hard as I want. I can say all I want. Oh, I'm just going to cruise down this one. Oh, it's only seeding, it's qualifying, whatever. Yeah. But as soon as I get off the gate, I just want to go as fast as I can. Yeah, just a racer, so... Yeah, just took it like any other race, really.
Sweet. And then another kind of chunk of confidence coming into the first World Cup.
Yeah.
Same place, not quite the same track.
Yeah.
Were there many changes to the track for the World Cup?
Yeah, there was a few. There was a couple of sections that they changed, but to be honest, it wasn't an awful lot. But it did help me going into the World Cup week just because I felt like I knew most of the track. I knew the bike was set up pretty good for a race run there. At the IXS I practiced quite a lot, and then for the race run the bike didn't quite feel how I wanted it to, so that was quite a good thing because you get to race a track at race speed, whereas generally you're trying to build through practice but you're not quite on race speed, so
yeah,
the bike can feel different obviously when you're not quite going on that edge. So it was quite nice to do a, you know, ride the bike in anger on the kind of the same track and know where I am with the bike set up. So I kind of make those changes through practice. And then there was no pressure because I pretty much knew where I was going. I was just looking for those tenths or that half a second there. Or, you know, I could focus more on, say, the rock garden because that had changed a little bit from the IXS.
Yeah.
So I could focus, put more of my focus on smaller areas of the track because I knew where I was going. And yeah, it set me up really well for a good result.
Yeah. So how did you approach that first World Cup weekend then? Did you spend a lot of time, like you say, analysing some of these areas where you thought you could get a little bit of time back?
Yeah, generally I try, after, because I'd ridden the track so much, there was a few little changes on the track like we spoke about, and I just went to them areas and just seeing how to get through them the best, and then the areas that I'd ridden before, just seeing if I could do it any better or change my line slightly so it would be better, or thinking where I could get pedals in or wherever, just a few little tents here and there.
Yeah.
I kind of see it as, maybe it's from like a motorsport side of things, but I kind of see it like a qualifying lap, in that you have to just think about tents here or there everywhere, and that after a full race run in 3 minutes, it can add up to quite a lot of time. So
yeah,
I think I'm quite good at that. It's just pulling little bits of time out of places where you wouldn't really expect. I think that's quite a good, I think it's quite important.
You spend quite a lot of time trackside then working that kind of stuff out.
Yeah, yeah, generally. And the biggest thing, I don't tend to stop a lot in practice, but I really think about the track and I try to, I'm not actually one of them riders that looks, I don't film everything, look at GoPros all the time. I quite like to memorize the track. Just, I'm not sure why. I just like to memorize it instead of watch it. Maybe because I focus on it a little bit more and I feel like I'm more involved in what I'm doing. But yeah, I always kind of think about, I remember Greg was saying, actually, the way that he looks at a track is that there's some sections where he can put 110% in, and there's other sections where he doesn't feel so confident that he goes 85-90%. But then by the end of the run, that adds up to something that's 100%, that's pretty good. So it's kind of how I see it in a way. I kind of took inspiration from that, and there's some sections that I feel like I can push hard and I'm confident, and I push the limits there and take risks. And then there's other sections I just try and ride as fast as anyone else. Like at Maribor, there was the big rock garden. That was a section to me that I didn't feel like I could really make any time there. I'm confident that I can ride it as fast as anyone else, but it's not a place on the track where you're going to make time. You're not okay. going to win the race there,
yeah.
but you can certainly lose it. Yeah. So it's just about, there's a lot of places on tracks where that's the case. So I think it's just it's just making time on places where people really wouldn't expect.
Fair play. How was your race run? Because you said on the live feed, I think, that you knew you were on a good one, and so maybe you backed it out a little bit towards the lower end.
Yeah, that's it. I felt like I had a strong start to the run, and I got towards the bottom, and it was kind of a drying track. I just really didn't want to crash and push the limits too much. I wanted to get one in the bank. As I guess that was kind of a confidence thing. I felt like I was riding well and I knew I was riding well, so I just needed to get to the bottom. And there was this one like off-camber section that I'd had in that morning. I had a bit of a slip-up on. I never crashed, but I just blew low of the line. So I just really held back there and just got it nice, and I guess lost a bit of time there, but I just made it through the section. But all the, like I was saying before, the rest of the run, I kind of pushed really hard and made that time back, so I could kind of afford to drop a bit of time there where I felt like I didn't want to risk anything. But that kind of, it shows in my sector times. I was right up there, and in that particular sector, I dropped to 24th. That sector time was 24th, and then made it back. And from there, after that section to the finish, I was the fastest. So that is also quite a big thing in itself, that I can, after a race run, I can analyze myself and I can say, right, well, in that section, I was definitely slower. In this section, I felt like I rode it well, and the time backs that up. So that gives you confidence that you know the job at hand, really.
Yeah.
You're confident in your ability, and you know what you can do, and
yeah.
You know where you're slow and you know where you're fast. So no, it's nice. We're in a really good place.
Yeah. Happy days. So how did you feel when you realized you got a podium?
Oh, it was unbelievable. It was. I came off the hot seat, and then I think Troy came through and beat me. Charlie Harrison came through and beat me, and I was fifth, and there was still four or five riders left. And I really didn't think I was going to get a podium. And I said to, I think my dad was there, and he said, this is Rob, his friend. He said, I said to Rob before the race, I think you're going to be seventh. And then Rob, his mate, said, I think you're going to be sixth. And I was like, it'd be quite annoying if I'm sixth, because I'll be just off the podium. But obviously, that's amazing. I had seventh last year at Fort William, so to match that or better it for the first one of the year is going to be plenty. So I got into the top 10, and I knew I was going to be ninth or better, so I was well happy with that. And then it dropped to eighth. then seventh, sixth. Then I was fifth, and there was one man left, Mark Wallace. He set off at the start, and he was 15th at the first split, and I kind of thought, oh, I might have done it. And you're kind of looking around, and you don't want to say anything or do anything, but you're kind of in the back of your mind thinking, oh, I could have got on a podium here. I might be on a World Cup podium. And I'm kind of looking around the crowd, I'm thinking, this is mental, I could be on the podium here. And then he goes for the second split, and he's still further back. And then my dad's patting me on the back, and I'm going, oh, no, don't start. And then everyone's kind of nudging me and saying, oh, you've done it, you've done it. And then Mark starts pulling back time. And I'm going, oh, no, I'm going to be sixth. I'm going to be sixth. It was like a horrible emotional roller coaster. And he crossed the line and he was about half a second behind me. He went into seventh or eighth. Can't remember now. But then everyone just erupted around me. I was in the crowd. Everyone was picking me up. Had my arms in the air. It was mental. Danny came over, congratulated us, and yeah, it was just such a good moment for the team, and we knew we had the team overall as well, like a few minutes after that. And yeah, it was just, I wish there was more time between the end of the race and the podium, because I was just in such a whirlwind speaking to everyone. My mum was on the phone, my nan was on the phone, just trying to speak to everyone and celebrate. And then I was straight on the podium and I was still buzzing. And yeah, I don't know.
Bit surreal.
It was just a surreal half an hour of my life. It was crazy
and an awesome result. I mean, so many guys that can be in that top 20 now.
Yeah,
so tight as well. The racing, particularly at Maribor.
Yeah,
so it's an amazing sign for the rest of the season.
Yeah, no, it's good. I feel really good on the bike, and yeah, I just take it as it comes, really. I'm full of confidence and just try and ride within myself. I know it's enough now, and I know what I can do on that kind of run. So yeah, I'm really excited. I just hope that I get on with the other tracks as well as I got on with the start of the year, and there's no reason why I can't. I've got a great team around me, great support, great bike, and yeah, I'm just excited for what's next.
Yeah, and you're one of the riders that's kind of, I guess, been a little bit like on the down low. You know, you look at all the kind of the internet forums and stuff, like, oh, who's going to do well this season?
Yeah.
And there's a few people who know, but actually your name doesn't get mentioned so much. Whereas I guess Finn, who you went through juniors with and was a big competitor for you, you know, a lot of people have been touting him for, you know, podiums and beyond. How do you feel about that? Do you think it helps being like in this sort of underdog, or like, is there less pressure as a result?
Yeah, there is. I guess there is less pressure and there's a lot less people talking about you and stuff, but it does kind of get to a point where you feel like you deserve it a bit. I'm not like self-centered, and I don't feel like everyone should be saying, like, praising me. I don't feel like that. I just, sometimes it's nice to just, you know, for people to recognize that I'm riding well.
Yeah.
And I guess after this, the start of the year, and I've had loads of messages from some, you know, some big names in the sport and other riders and stuff, and that, you know, that they're starting to notice that I'm riding well, and you know, it's really nice. It's great. I think I have spent quite a lot of time as that underdog, and I'm coming to that time of year where I'm ready to come out of that,
yeah,
and show myself and be consistent at the top of the racing. And yeah, I guess because I've all the way through junior I was kind of second to Finn the whole time, and he's a massive name and a widely known name with huge sponsors, and I was close to him. I was really close behind, but I was always second, or right. I won a couple of times, but the most of the time I was second, and it wasn't like he was beating the field by 10 seconds every time he went racing. He was just beating me by a couple of seconds, half a second, a second. But yeah, people only care who's on the top of the podium, and that's just the way it is.
Yeah,
and I accept that, and yeah, this is where we're at now, but I just want to prove that I want to be a top contender, and hopefully in the next couple of years I can stick it to the top boys and really be up there.
Good stuff. So how do you think you've changed over the last few years then,
in terms of,
well, like in your approach to everything, like
I don't know. I guess, you always have that wild stage in junior where you're going out and crashing all the time and just learning. It took a lot of time to learn. I did a lot of crashing. And yeah, I think that's just the junior way. You're just pushing yourself to try and learn and watching the pro riders do it. And you want to be going that fast, but you're just not quite ready yet. So you end up crashing a lot and getting injured and stuff. And that was just the way it is. But I guess I'm getting a little bit older and getting a bit more of a mature head on my shoulders, and I know I've got all the tools I need to do the job. So I guess physically I'm bigger and stronger than I have been the last couple of years, which has made quite a big difference. Mentally, I guess I'm out of that kind of crazy junior stage now, a bit more mature, and I go about my racing a lot more methodically and more intelligently, I guess. But yeah, besides that, I still like to have a lot of fun. I still have a lot of stuff going on besides the racing, like with the cars and the bikes. And yeah, I mean, not an awful lot's changed, to be honest.
Cool. Have you had to make a lot of sacrifices to get to where you are?
Yeah, I think I have. But I have had to make sacrifices, but I don't feel like it. You know, it's all worth it. I don't feel like they're a sacrifice at the time, because for what it's worth, it's, you know, I'd much rather be doing what I'm doing. And you know what it's like being 18, 19 years old, everyone's going out and partying all the way at the weekend, and you know, all my mates are going, and I generally stay at home and train and are quite focused on what I'm doing. But I'd much rather be doing that than going out and not getting the results I want to. Because although it's great fun and it's great social, I just feel like there's no better feeling than being on the top of the podium on a Sunday afternoon. There's nothing better to me than that. So that's why, if there's something that's in my way that is stopping me from getting there, then I just cut it out. I don't need it. I'm just completely obsessed by the fact of getting to the top. So it is hard, and it's hard for people around me because I can be quite selfish at times, but I know how to say no, in a way. To birthday parties and events, family stuff, it can be quite hard, but it's so worth it at the time. I guess I've had to sacrifice a lot for that, but because I'm so driven, it almost affects my family, my friends, probably more than it'll affect me.
Okay.
Because I know what I want, and I'm driven towards that, and anything that stands in my way, I just get rid of it.
Good stuff.
So it's harder for them, I guess.
Yeah.
But hopefully it's worth it for them to see me getting somewhere and succeeding at what I want to do. Yeah. So
for sure. So what are your aims for the rest of the season?
Just to say, stay fit and healthy, which I guess is number one with everyone, really. But in terms of results, no change really from the start of the year. Just I've had a standout result, but as we know, downhill's quite an unpredictable sport and anything can happen. So just to stay inside that top 10 still and, be on the edge of that podium, and maybe another podium would be great.
Sweet. I look forward to it. We'll wrap up. We've got our three questions that we've asked pretty much everyone, so we'll hit those up quickly.
Yeah.
First one, if our listeners had £150 to spend to improve their performance on a bike, what would you recommend they spend it on? It'd be anything you like.
£150. Let me think about that. How much are brakes these days?
Depends how fancy you get. You could probably get a cheap set. Or like, maybe, I don't know, SLX or something, maybe.
SLX.
£150 for a pair.
What about one
brake,
one zinc front brake?
You go front then if you're going to choose one good brake.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and you go Saint.
Yeah, definitely. I think that would help, wouldn't it? Because if you can, in terms of getting faster.
Yeah,
because if you can slow yourself down, you can go faster.
Makes sense.
Then you can slow yourself down faster.
Yeah,
maybe that would be it. Yeah, maybe a big front brake.
It's confidence in brakes is super important to you then.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. They have to feel right.
Yeah.
And if the, yeah, they have to be pretty powerful. Yeah, I don't think it would really, it, I wouldn't say 150 quid. I wouldn't say I'll spend it in the gym, spend it on a personal trainer. That's not really going to help you, I don't think.
Because it's not enough money, you mean? Or
there's definitely areas that you can spend that money on that's going to benefit you more.
Okay.
The biggest thing is going to, you'd obviously say, is suspension. That would be definitely the biggest help. But then you can't get that for 150 quid.
You could maybe get someone to set it up right for you.
That's a good point. Never thought about that. Yeah, maybe that. Maybe that then.
Don't know how much Geordie costs these days, but I'm sure you find someone.
Fair wacko. Yeah, I think probably that then. Yeah, spending your money on getting your suspension tuned properly. Because you do see a lot of bikes set up badly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good stuff.
Or you can come to our Saracen Experience Day and we'll do it for free.
Oh, how do you get to go to that?
There'll be a link online and I think it's towards the end of July, usually, after National Champs.
Okay.
So if you keep your eyes peeled, it'll be on Facebook, on follow Saracen Excellent. Bikes and you'll see it.
Do you know where you're doing it this year?
It's been Revolution. And we did two last year. We did one at Revolution, one at Hampstead. So I imagine it'll be the same.
Yeah.
So I think we're back. I think we are definitely back to Revolution. So end of July time.
Cool.
Come on down to Revolution Bike Park and Saracen will be there. So the team will be there and we're happy to help you set your bike up. So.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds good. Nice one. Second question. If you could wind back the clock and sit down with yourself age 16, which isn't very long ago for you, what advice would you give him?
Age 16. Don't know really. Probably take your time and trust yourself. It's pretty mundane stuff, but I felt like I've had a pretty good time. I don't have many regrets. I'd not really done anything too wrong. I've had a pretty good time, and so yeah, just trust yourself. Just there's no need to get worked up about whether you're good enough or not. Just
have you been through phases where you have got a bit worked up about it, like where it's become a stress?
Yeah, I think so. You think just as an athlete, you do. It's always kind of a wavy mission.
Yeah.
Through injury and races and stuff, and I'm particularly bad at beating myself up if I don't do as well as I would like. So it is tough, but yeah, just if I think I would definitely, I'm getting much better now, but I think I'd definitely benefit more if I didn't beat myself up as much after not doing as well as I'd like.
Yeah.
So yeah, probably that.
What's helped you? Yourself. What's helped you get better at that? Is it just experience?
Yeah, or? just doing badly more often, really.
Okay.
And just being in that situation more.
Yeah.
I think. Okay. Really.
Yeah. Fair play. Some things you can't fast forward, you've got to go through it, haven't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. And then the last question, if you could have a coaching session from anyone, past or present, who would it be and what would you want to learn?
It would be, let's have a think. If I could have a coaching session from anyone, what would it be? It would be I reckon something Leon Haslam and how to ride a motorbike around a track fast. That's what it would be.
Yeah
bit different, but there we go, that's what it would be.
Yeah,
or it would be like, apart from that, it would be how to drive a car with Ayrton Senna.
That would be special.
That would be pretty ridiculous, I think.
Yeah. Hard to achieve.
Very.
But
even just to sit next to the bloke
and
shake his hand.
Pretty special.
Be enough. But yeah, something like that. Just something a bit different.
Do you take anything from some of these like motorsports heroes into your mountain biking? Is there any kind of influence, do you think, from the motorsports side to you as an athlete? I mean,
yeah, I guess some of the people that I, well, pretty much all the people I look up to have just been dominant in their, you know, they're just like Senna was just so, so good.
Yeah.
And Joey Dunlop is the same. Like a lot of the people that I look up to like, are just, yeah, dominant, I guess. And it's just the way that they do that, because there's so much more than just being a good bike racer or a good car driver or whatever. So it's more away from the track, what they do to make sure they stay on top of their game for years and years.
Yeah.
So that's generally what I try and take away from racing, is just about how to stay consistent and how to have a career, like keep the longevity of the career and be consistent and keep yourself at the top of the game for a long time.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, cool. Right, if people want to follow your season and the rest of your career, where's the best place for them? Is it Instagram or?
Probably Instagram, yeah, at MattWalkerDH.
Excellent. We shall stick a link in the show notes so we can send people there.
Great, perfect.
Cool. All right, well, thanks a lot for your time.
No problem.
Look forward to the rest of the season, seeing how it goes for you. Hopefully it continues in the way that it started.
Hopefully, yeah. We'll see what we can get up to.
Good stuff.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, Matt.
All right, that's it for our episode with Matt. I hope you enjoyed listening. I definitely learned a lot from Matt's detailed approach. Thanks again to PNW Components and Morvelo Clothing for supporting this episode. Don't forget, they've both got great listener discount offers for you, so go and check them out. Head to pnwcomponents.com and use the code DOWNTIME at the checkout for 10% off, and head to morvelo.com/MTB and use the code DOWNTIME, all uppercase, at the checkout for 25% off all full price clothing, and that runs until the end of May. Some awesome deals for you right there. So please give us a follow on social media where we're at Downtime Podcast. Subscribe to the show so you get all of our episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you want to get yourself some exclusive Downtime Podcast goodies, then head to downtimepodcast.com/shop. Keep on telling your friends about the podcast and spreading the word. It really does make a massive difference. All right, we've got another awesome episode coming up soon. But until then, get out and ride.